Now a full-time resident of Ottawa, apparently. I think he spent the better part of a week here. Here's TSN's Dave Poole in a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
I'm moving in, JR. I'm moving in. Always been one of my favorite cities. I actually traveled a lot here as a kid. My grandparents are from here and both sets, and so I spent a lot of time here, and I love the city. I always have.
All right, good stuff. Well, you are actually going back home after doing the game off tube, as you like to say, last night from Columbus. So give us your overall thoughts on what Ottawa was able to accomplish in that 2-1 win last night.
Well, I think just finishing the game was the most important thing. And, you know, we've talked about it. We've talked about playing well and not finishing, and that's not good enough. And I really think that the ability to close that game out, we were talking about pregame subjects, and I was thinking about the last two teams they lost to, Pittsburgh and Washington. You think about who won those games for Pittsburgh and Washington, and the difference makers were some of the best players, you know, in the NHL for years. And certainly Malkin and Crosby were both significant factors in Pittsburgh, but Ovechkin took over that third period. And, you know, and I heard Sim earlier say that he reminds him of a striker in soccer right now, and it's such an apt comparison because he's out there, but you're not quite sure what he's going to do. And then when he takes off, it's like, wow, he's still such a significant factor. And then Backstrom in overtime. And, you know, you have to factor in that those are three of your last six Stanley Cup winners. And those are teams that have been really battle-hardened. And then they've added pieces as well. Like, so you go get another couple of cups from Jeff Carter and his experience in LA, and they just know how to win at crucial times. And you wonder if Ottawa fans, although absorbed in their own world of sports yesterday, felt a little better about the Pittsburgh game when they saw what Pittsburgh did to Winnipeg in the third period yesterday, you know, down 2-0 and come back and win that game, you know, against the veteran Winnipeg team. So just a lot of really good signs for me yesterday in that Columbus game, in the way they just kept battling. I mean, that's a good road trip. 3 points is a good road trip going into those three cities and getting the job done in 4 days, back-to-back yesterday. And a lot of good signs. And, you know, I think that, you know, then you look at micro signs. That might be the best game I've seen Nick Holden play in a defensive way. I mean, he made some plays in close in front of his net in terms of tying people up, and that sort of trickles down to the other players. You know, isn't Eric Branstrom watching? There was one play in particular, I think it was Eric Robinson, that had an empty net, and Holden got over top of his stick. And so you're watching Branstrom watch that play. And if I'm Branstrom, or I'm the defensive coaches, I'm taking that clip to him and saying, okay, look what he does here. He goes over the top of the stick. He ties up a big man with a wide open net just by being effective and doesn't take a penalty. So a lot of good signs for me, JR.
Do you look at a guy like Holden as, say, that would be a player that people would identify in a low salary cap hit, Pooley, and lots of experience, and even a team like Toronto trying to shore up their defense?
Yeah, the shopping period is going to be interesting because he's at such a workable number on the financial side too, Zimmer, and a UFA, so he doesn't carry into next year. So, you know, that's a commodity, a depth commodity. That's the old, you know, you never have too many defensemen theory. And so I could see some interest in him around the league for sure.
Eric Branstrom got a chance to play as they sat Jacob Bernard-Docker pretty much exclusively with Thomas Chabot last night. Now playing his offside, which I know the coaches, to at least start the season, was not a big fan of, but he's been forced to, or maybe his play has dictated that Branstrom plays his offside. But what were your thoughts on Eric Branstrom's game last night in particular?
I'll take you to two specific plays in the third period. And I'm going to start near the end of the game when he wheels the puck off a faceoff around the net and just wheels it, just skates it around the net and clears the zone and just beats his guy, beats him to the far side of the net and clears the zone. You're like, okay, well, that's exactly what he has to do. He takes the pressure off the wing on the wall. He doesn't just ring the puck and make it a battle at the blue line. He takes all those elements out and you're saying, okay, that's a really, really good NHL play. But there was a rush, a line rush, that led to a scoring chance. It might have been Voracek on the left wing. And because he's a left shot, JR, he's got to position himself on a 3-on-2, so he takes away a pass from his left to right. He's on the right side. I don't want to get too technical here, but the pass was made through his stick, and the way he's holding his stick, it's just a positional thing, but it's because he's a left shot playing the right side. Like if I'm an attacking center, I look at that and say, okay, that's something I'm going to exploit until he figures out a different way to handle that rush. So I think there's still learning points, and you can see there's some disadvantages to playing the offside. I think I played with two of the best, arguably, in the history of the game at playing the offside. There's a guy that wore 77 in Boston for a long time, Raymond Bourque, who played the offside and made it look flawless and loved it over there. Loved the way he saw the ice, loved having his stick in the middle of the ice for passing purposes, could handle everything on his backhand. And then Brad McCrimmon, the other one in Philadelphia, another guy who played the offside basically his whole career and thrived on it. So I think it's a learning thing for Brännström, but overall, I was impressed with his weekend, you know, more minutes. And I like the coaching aspect of it because they were sort of pretending not to play him in that spot by not putting him there on the lineup card and not starting there on the first shift. But by three shifts in, we're like, oh, Brännström's going to play with Shabbat tonight. You know, they just didn't tell us. Last night, there was no hiding, and he was in the lineup with Shabbat and playing with Shabbat.
Thoughts on Stützle's weekend?
Good, good. You know, he's still – now, I don't want to get my games mixed up here, but I think it was the Pittsburgh game when he hurt his arm in the third period. And Shabbat came over and gave him a little tap on the head and said, forget your shoulder. It's in here. Go to the bench. And you get ready to play again. And then you remember that he's still really, really young. And then you see the explosion. I loved the use of his ice on that goal because he picks up the puck in the neutral zone from Formanton. But then there was so much attention being paid to Drake Batherson. I want to talk about that, too. So much attention to being paid to Batherson by both defensemen that it opened up a lane for Stützle, and then you saw the explosion and the speed. But the little move to move Batherson at the start of the second period with Stützle and Formanton really picked up that second line. The very first shift they played, because Sanford started that second period with Norris and Kachuk, we were like, okay, I wonder if Batherson's hurt. But we have a chart, and we could see he was still on the bench. And then he comes out for the second shift, makes a great forecheck and a pass to Formanton, and they have a scoring chance on their first shift of the period. And he just brings, Batherson brings so much to whomever he plays with, and, you know, and did with Stützle and Formanton. I thought their game increased considerably. The problem is there's only one Batherson. Both lines can't have him. But one of the things that's come out of this pandemic and all the lineup, you know, holes and all the guys missing at various times is that coaches have seen everyone play with everyone. And so somebody said between periods, hey, let's see if we can get Timmy and Alex to another offensive level by giving them Batherson to start the period. And it worked for the next two periods, and I thought they were very, very effective. Now, once again, then you lose something offensively with Kachuk and Norris, but you're also putting the onus on them to say, okay, you know, you don't get Batherson right now.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people talked about the evolution of Alex Formanton's game in particular, more than just kind of a chip and chase guy and a guy to try to spring for breakaways with passes, etc., but just being more creative or more assertive on the cycle, etc., in the offensive zone. Did you note more of that and have noted more of that as especially the last, let's say, week to 10 days has progressed and he's gotten a regular turn with Stützle?
I have, and that play I'm talking about, the first play of the second period, was exactly that. It was a forecheck where he read the play, and he read where the open ice was, and it wasn't. It was like a little bit higher and a little bit off to one side in that slot. So that's exactly what they're looking for on the cycle play, is his positioning and being able to read to go to open ice. And, you know, really fast players, JR, they have this curse growing up. They don't have to learn all the nuances on the game, because they're so fast. They just skate by you. It's not their fault. They just skate by you. And you know, I remember having a conversation with Mark Stone about why he was so good at stealing the puck. And he said, well, I had to be because I couldn't skate as fast as everybody else. So he learned all the things that go with that. And then obviously his skating improved. But a player like Formanton, if he saw a defenseman in front of him and he was, I don't know, 12 years old, 14 years old, he skated by him. He didn't have to beat him. You know, he got everywhere faster than everybody else did. It's very similar to when I watched Chris Kreider in prep school. We didn't know how good he was. He was playing prep school hockey in New England. He was so big, so fast, and so good that you had no idea how good the player was. And then the common rap to put on a player like that is, well, he doesn't have good hockey sense, because he doesn't have to show you all the little details of the game because his speed is so good. And so I think Formanson clearly has the speed. Guys, he beat Werenski wide, shorthanded. Zach Werenski's a pretty good player and a really good skater, and he still underestimated Formanson's speed. Now, in the locker room before the game, they'd be saying, hey, you got to watch Formanton. He's really fast. You know, some guys would have played junior against him. Some guys have seen him in the American League and they'd say, hey, 10 can fly. You know, but what does that mean on a relative basis? And Werenski took the wrong angle on him, and Formanton just blew by him. And so I think when he takes the next step on the rush, it'll be change of speed. It'll be deception. You'll think I'm going full speed, but I'm not, and I have another gear. And then in the zone, it's using that speed and that quickness to get to different areas of the ice. So I do think we're seeing a progression in his game, and it's really fun to watch.
Watching Lainey last night, I know he recently lost his father, Pooley. I almost wanted to give him a hug because he looks so kind of one speed, and I guess I'd almost term it to be miserable. But looking at his entire body work in Columbus and Winnipeg, now he's only 24 years old, $7.5 million restricted free agent. How would you handle his contract going forward if you're Columbus or another team?
Boy, oh boy, that is a really tough one, Simmer. He had 138 goals in his first 4 years in the league, 44 goals in his second year. We showed a little clip last night with some of the outfits he's been wearing to games, and I was almost encouraged by that because his love of the game and his, you know, his spontaneity and enthusiasm was all part of what made him special in Winnipeg. He was just different. You know, we were looking at him, and he's 6'5", 225 pounds, which people don't realize he's that big. And you look at him going, okay, well, he's different. And I thought I saw more last night than I'd seen earlier in the year. I'd seen, you know, you didn't love his enthusiasm last night, and I thought it was up from where it had been early in the year. That's how low it was early in the year. And so Yarmo really has some work to do there to figure out what he has. In the last part of this year, you know, it might be right now with all he's been through, sitting him down, Simmer, and saying, look, you know, we got to figure out what you are, but you got to figure out what you are as well. And they made a couple of decisions to sign players. Merzlikens is one, Werenski is one, and Boone Jenner. And I think Jenner signed a 4-year deal. And the critical part of that for me is they haven't been able to convince people to stay in Columbus. You know, even the young guy like Seth Jones, Ryan Johansson, guys like that. Part of it was that they didn't think they were going to get paid, but part of it was that they didn't want to stay in Columbus. I think Columbus is a great Midwest town. You know, I lived in the Midwest towns where I raised my kids in a Midwest town, and the quality of life is really high. And, you know, it's a university town, and so you get some things with that. And I think that is a prelude to trying to get Line A done long term, is, you know, to tell him that others are choosing to stay. The Boone Jenner one in particular, it may not seem like a lot. Like, on a perfect team, he's probably a two in the center hole. You know, he scored 30 goals in the league once, but the significance of a 28-29 year old choosing to stay in Columbus, I think that's messaging by Yarmo Kekalainen and the general manager, and a little bit of it is directed at Line A, but they have to figure it out. I doubt very highly it's going to be another bridge deal. He's going to want some security this time around.
Doesn't seem a matter of if, but when Jake Chychrun is going to get traded out of Arizona, and it's mentioned on the weekend that at least three or four teams have put together a package involving a player, a pick, and a first round, or a player, a prospect, and a first round draft pick, and at least one of those is on the table already. Do you think a deal for him gets done sooner rather than later? And if you think about the teams that you might have heard mentioned, Dave, in conjunction with his name, where do you think would be the best fit?
Well, there's two ways for Billy Armstrong to handle it. It's one to get, you know, and I like the theory of making deals early if I was trading for a player. And, you know, I just like getting out ahead of it. I like the thought process before the price gets crazy. If you know what you want and you've defined it, then go out and get it. And if you pay a little bit of a higher price for it than the actual market ends up being, so be it. You also get them for another month or month and a half, and he has more time to acclimatize to your team. And I was traded in mid to late January, so, you know, a month plus ahead of the trade deadline. So by the time the trade deadline rolled around, I was fully immersed with the team. So there's that aspect of it. There's all the other aspect that the longer you wait, the less the cap hit is. Now, if money is going out, that's not as big a factor. But boy, oh boy, it seems like New York Rangers are involved in a lot of things and managed to get a lot of players who want to play in New York. Now, whether that's the case with Chickering or not, I'm not sure. But, you know, with Fox, it was. With Panarin, it was. They wanted to play in New York. And I don't even know if I dare throw out the Vegas Knights. Like, can you even mention them? I don't, you know, because it seems like if there's a Pietrangelo or a Mark Stone or a Max Pacioretty or a Robin Lehner or whatever the flavor of the day is, yeah, let's have Vegas go get them. Like, I don't even know. But a young defenseman like that obviously would fit in a lot of different places. The price is really, really high. So you have to look at a team that has assets, but also is, I think, a little further along in the curve than some of the teams are, than Ottawa is. And I think with the young defenseman that Ottawa has coming, even though technically you could say Jacob Chychrun was an Ottawa kid through ancestry with his father, Jeff, I think it's going to be one of the high-profile teams that thinks to make a run at it. That might be Florida. I think Bill Zito's still got work to do down there in his mind. It might be the Rangers.
Is Boston a possibility? You think Boston's a possibility?
Yeah, I do. I do. I do think Donnie Sweeney's got some work to do there. And I'm not sure that he has the assets that these other teams I'm talking about have. And particularly the Rangers have some young players that would be very attractive.
Yeah, in the case of Boston, tie with Bruce Cassidy, and in Florida, Dad does TV there and lives there. So, and he grew up in Florida, so that makes sense. Have a local guy. How far down can Arizona go, Pooley? I mean, I know you can, but also, are they going to be on the horn with Vegas to take bad contracts back, which works for everybody? Because, I mean, I know they're scraping it low, but my oh my.
I don't think that you and I are going to have to answer that, because I think they're going to answer that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think this is going to be... You know, I think it's tied to the potential building project, and they're trying to time the curve of the team. And apologies for the flight changing there. I think that it's not my flight that we're good. I think that so much of it depends on when this proposed building project, they're going to get a building somewhere. They've got the casino rights. They've got, you know, their development play, and they're going to get it done. It's a matter of when and when that curve hits. And if it's further away, I think they say that Bill Armstrong just keeps selling and keep building for the future.
And is it also...
But you also get into a challenge, Simmer, because and Ottawa ran into it. You can't prove everybody at the exact same time. Because if you all, you know, four draft picks, four first-rounders in the same draft, and they all come and due for contracts at the same time, you run into a situation like Toronto where four players absorb 52% of the cap.
Is it also as simple as they don't have any cash right now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now start looking at contracts that are cap heavy, but cash friendly. And the reason Phil Kessel's there is, you know, his numbers, his cash numbers are down so low versus the cap hit that he absorbs. So it is, but their cash is not there because it chooses not to be there. The development company is a wealthy company.
Last one for you. Unfortunately, it was an ugly incident in an East Coast Hockey League game over the weekend involving PK Subban's brother, Jordan, where a player by the name of Jacob Panetta, allegedly, we'll use allegedly because he's denied that he made a racist gesture in a Twitter video last night, but he's been suspended indefinitely. It's raised the overall issue of, does hockey have a culture issue? I think we all agree to a certain extent it does. Do you believe that it's we're in massive need of change in terms of hockey culture, or is this something that is improving but is just slow to improve?
I think the change is happening. A large part of it is going in such a positive direction. Just the awareness of this situation and how high profile it is and the zero tolerance for it, JR, says we're on the right track. Are there still going to be isolated incidents? Just pure numbers wise, unfortunately there are, but in terms of going in the right direction, awareness of it, and zero tolerance for it, we are going in the right direction.
All right, good stuff. Appreciate the time as always, Dave. Safe travels back home. I hope Fred and Ted recognize who you are when you walk in the front door. The cats may not even know who you are.
They'll be the happiest two people there.
Okay. We'll talk again on Wednesday. Thanks for the time.
Have a great day, guys. Thanks.